10 miles from downtown Boston, Newton Center sits at the crossroads of America's upper middle class. At local cafes, business cards are exchanged, and deals are made in the same space where European nannies meet to discuss life back home and caring for privileged infants here. But the Mercedes-Benzes and BMWs parked outside Pete's Cafe mask the anxiety some here are experiencing about their place in the area's complex economic landscape.
And I'm just one of many, many, many that were in my position that lost their jobs.
Ken Jaffe, a former community outreach executive at a local bank, was laid off in 2012. Before he was shown the door, he and his wife made a combined $150,000 a year.
And then all of a sudden, 120 of it isn't there anymore.
Jaffe, who has a daughter with Asperger's syndrome, volunteers at medical clinics and food banks in between job searches.
But constantly looking for work.
He said he once had a clear idea of what it meant to be middle class.
My father was a retailer. He owned a catering business and a retail food store, and my mother was a secretary. Yet we could live on Mason Terrace in Brookline, which was considered middle class. And my father could also write charitable checks. And still, we'd have a few dollars left for his retirement. That was middle class.
110 job applications later, Ken Jaffe's 401k retirement account is nearly depleted.
And now I'm dealing with a sizable debt to the IRS. But, you know, insurance costs don't go down, your food costs don't go down. In stretching with one child that needs outside medical care that we have to pay for out of pocket, I'm not so sure we'll ever see the middle class again.
Class insecurity is felt even by folks who make what most of us would consider a good income.
I'm middle class, but I don't feel so middle anymore.
Jonathan Cohen says that in spite of earning
more than $150,000,
he's still insecure. Jonathan Cohen runs summer camps, and paying for that experience has long been a quintessential symbol of making it in America for many families.
Hello, mother. Hello, father. Here I am at Camp Granada.
It's not the same market or environment when my grandfather started our first camp 80 years ago. We've noticed probably since like 2007, 2008, the requests for financial aid have gone up dramatically to the point where, you know, we give financial aid to the best of our ability, whether we've covered the money through fundraising or not. To people who are making, you know, what should seem like good money, but it's expensive to send your kids to camp.
And how far your money stretches depends heavily on where you live.
I live in Brookline.
And Cohen says in his community, where the average home cost is $899,000, income is trickling down less and less each day.
We have a well-regarded school system that's attracted a lot of people, but there's talks about getting rid of the METCO program because it costs so much, without looking at really what the benefits are, not just to the kids coming from Boston, but certainly to the white middle-class kids in Brookline and the real value of that program.
Cohen's son attends Brookline High, and this father's middle-class anxiety centers on his son's future.
Do you want to be able to put away my son's, you know, college education?
Cohen sighs with either resignation or disgust. It's not clear. $150,000 a year is not what it used to be, he says.
I mean, between taxes, both, you know, the income taxes, and I'm, you know, those I think are fair enough, but property taxes and where I choose to live.
But some have little or no choice where they live. And professor of social work Tiziana Deering of Boston College says even neighborhoods in Boston that view themselves as lower middle class are becoming too expensive for many.
And we're certainly seeing that in the real estate markets today. World War II and into the 1950s, we really put great cultural emphasis on the importance of owning your home in order to be middle class. But as the real estate markets change, that may be changing for us too.
Samantha Sanchez used to live in the city.
I grew up in East Boston.
But moved to a less expensive neighborhood north of Boston. Sanchez works at a car rental agency downtown. In fact, she's always worked at car rental agencies.
Well, like I said, I grew up in East Boston, and it was my first job. That's what you did. You got a job at the airport. Once you find it, you stick with it.
Many residences in East Boston, the very neighborhood where she was raised, are out of reach financially. One East Boston residence in recent days went for $900,000, a price few Bostonians could ever afford. But East Boston's waterfront, in spite of unsightly LNG tankers navigating toward the harbor, is attracting new home buyers to the old neighborhood.
These old factory buildings that have been abandoned and no one has gone near in years, now they're these giant, ultra-deluxe, ultra-expensive things. And it's all the surrounding areas. It's East Boston, it's Chelsea, all those neighborhoods that, like, growing up, I, myself, you know, my friends, we all used to walk around. Every place is changing.
I think that unless we can find a way to solve this housing problem, we cannot solve the income inequality problem.
And here's why, says Barry Bluestone, an economist at Northeastern University's Dukakis Center.
Because if you think about income inequality, it's not just do you have a high income or a low income, it's how much does that income buy you? And so the real problem in Boston is not only that we have the fourth highest degree of income inequality, but we have the second or third highest cost of living. So for those at the bottom of the income distribution, they get doubly hit.
Well, what I do is I take people to restaurants.
Leslie, who goes by one name, owns his own limousine service. Well, actually, it's a van, but he'll drive you anywhere. The mall, clubs, casinos, restaurants, and of course the airport.
What is so fantastic about it? I love to meet people. I love to have good conversation.
He steers folks from Newton and Brookline, Everett and Roxbury, and he's seen all sides of the economic picture in his rearview mirror as he drives. Leslie's a self-made man and is on call 24 hours.
I am independent.
You are independent.
This is mine.
But he's the first to admit he'll never become wealthy this way. All he wants to do is hold on to his middle-class position in life. At the end of the week, how much are you bringing in, if you don't mind me asking?
Nothing much, maybe $700-$800.
He's all smiles during the spring and summer.
It's not bad when you're working.
But in the throes of winter, this proud Jamaican immigrant feels his middle-class existence slipping away.
In the winter, it's a nightmare. During the winter, the people from California, Arizona, Florida don't want to come to Boston. So it's really slow. There's no business.
So it's hard to make a living.
Hard to make a living.
And even though this limousine driver is literally mobile, he feels his own social mobility, the ability to climb up the economic ladder, is made difficult by the crush of competition, seasonal highs and lows in his business, and by the region's stifling cost of living. Leslie just wants to hold on to what he was promised when he arrived in this country from Jamaica years ago, a middle-class existence in exchange for hard work.
Last year, over 5 million people go through Logan Airport. That's good for business.
How many of those did you receive as customers last year?
Much less.
He's not optimistic. In downtown Boston, Philip Martin, WGBH Boston Public Radio.